The Hard Shoulder.
With Nissan. Number one for petrol in Ireland. Number one for electric. Nissan. Innovation that excites.
This is News Talk.
We're joined now by one of Britain's foremost criminal defence barristers. I refer to William Clegg QC. He defended Barry George in the retrial for the murder of journalist and Crime Watch presenter Jill Dando in 07. He's written a book. It's called Under the Wig, and it is now on paperback. And I can tell you, it is a cracking read, as it is a memoir of his entire career. You're most welcome to the programme, William. I'm fascinated by so many things as a criminal defence lawyer. But let's just start with the Dando case. When you walked into the cell that contained your next client in 06, I'm referring to Barry George, what was your impression?
My impression was that he was a man with very limited intellect. He was obsessed about certain aspects of the case that were, in truth, rather irrelevant. He had very little grasp of the essential elements of the trial that he had been convicted in. And I formed the view that he was very unlikely to have committed what was the perfect crime.
And if not him, who did, do you think, commit it? Because it remains unresolved to this day.
Well, it is an unsolved murder. There are a number of theories. But, of course, representing Barry George, it wasn't my job to try to solve the crime. It was my job to ensure that, so far as he was concerned, he was found not guilty, as the evidence was clearly insufficient to establish he had anything to do with it. The theories that were in circulation at the time were really twofold. Firstly, Jill Dando had made an appeal on behalf of Kosovan refugees, and that was thought to have irritated some of the Serbian militia at the time. And there was thought that it could have been a Serbian hitman assassination. Certainly the killing had all the hallmarks of a professional hit. The second theory was that in her role as the anchor woman for Crime Watch, she'd been responsible for the apprehension of a number of important criminals in the UK, and that one of them may have put out a contract on her, but there was really no evidence to support either theory.
But the point is that you were absolutely satisfied it was a professional job, a professional hitman had done it, and not someone
there's
like
no
Barry
doubt.
George.
There's no doubt in my mind at all that it was a professional hit. Everything about the killing was professional. No forensic clue was left at the scene. The killer was lying in wait for her in her small front garden, undetected by anybody walking up and down the street. The shot that killed her was clinically administered and guaranteed to kill, and the murderer made good his escape without anybody seeing him.
Now, what I'm most fascinated to talk to you about is whether you ever form a view in relation to any client, in any case, as to whether they may have done this or not?
Well, part of our training, really, is not to embark upon that train of thought. We have a very strict rule in the profession, which is called the cab rank rule, which means that every barrister is required to accept the next brief he is offered in the speciality in which he practices, as long as it's marked as his ordinary, normal fee. So the barrister's not allowed to pick and choose between his cases, and only select those that he thinks he might win. And that ensures that everybody has the advantage of being properly defended in court. If a client confesses to a barrister and says that they are in fact guilty, but want to plead not guilty, then the rule is also very strict. The barrister cannot represent them. So we can only represent people who claim that they are not guilty. And then it's for the court and the jury to decide if they are guilty or not, and not us.
But just on that, isn't it the case, if I'm up for a crime and I tell you I did it, that is privileged information?
It is privileged, but it does mean that you can't then act for that person. You can't tell anybody else what he said to you. You can't become a witness for the prosecution and give evidence that he confessed. But you are not allowed to represent him. So you have to say to the judge, I've been embarrassed by my instructions and I have to withdraw from the case.
And is it obvious then within the legal circles that that's what's happened?
It's a fairly good bet that is what happened, but it could be that somebody had, for example, advanced a defence of alibi to a crime and then put forward a completely separate defence in interview, which could also embarrass you, but wouldn't necessarily mean that they were innocent. But 9 times out of 10, if not 99 times out of 100, it would mean that the person had actually confessed to you and therefore you can't act for them.
All right. So the confession case is pretty clear-cut in terms of this. My difficulty is this. Here are you, an eminent lawyer, very good at your job, top of your profession. You've dedicated your adult life to this issue of defending people. And you're completely, and I'm going to be harsh here, agnostic or amoral in relation to whether they're actually guilty or not, on the basis that the rules of your profession. I struggle with that.
Well, I think I would put it somewhat differently. The position is that for any system of justice to work and for every country to have a fair judicial system, people have to be properly defended. And the only way to ensure that is to have a mechanism whereby those who are charged with serious crime are represented. And that is what we have in the United Kingdom and indeed what you have also in Ireland. If you didn't have that system, then you wouldn't have any justice. And people charged with serious crime wouldn't be represented.
This is not an anti-British legal system point I'm making. I'm making the point, is it actually justice for victims? Because if you are so good at your job that you raise enough doubts that someone is acquitted when they've actually committed it, is that not a con on society and really unjust to victims?
Well, I don't think so, no. Any system of justice, certainly in Europe or in the United States, operates on the basis that the prosecution, if they bring a charge against a citizen, need to prove that charge beyond reasonable doubt. If they cannot do that, then it's right that the citizen should be found not guilty, because otherwise you're going to get a situation where innocent people are in fact convicted of crimes that they didn't do. And as you will have noticed, I've done a number of cases where that has been clearly established in the courts in England.
You see, I mean, but we've had very spectacular murder cases in this country, and some of them have been acquitted and others have been found guilty, and there are appeals pending. But you know, it's very difficult sometimes where the bar is, insofar as there may not be forensic evidence available because it happened a long time ago. You know, a woman was abducted 20 years ago and so on. But there is really compelling circumstantial evidence. Do you think the bar is in the right place?
Yes, the bar has to be set high to prevent innocent people being convicted. There's nothing wrong with a conviction based on circumstantial evidence, as long as that is compelling and proves that the person is guilty. Plenty are convicted on the basis of circumstantial evidence. There's nothing wrong with that as the basis for a safe conviction at all. What the law requires is that the evidence taken as a whole proves that the person committed the crime. If it doesn't do that, then I don't think anybody would think that the person should be convicted.
Tell us of the case of Colin Stagg.
Well, there's a question in point. You see, there was a man who was arrested for a terrible murder of a girl called Rachel Nickell on Wimbledon Common in London, and had barristers been allowed to pick and choose their clients, it may be that nobody would have been prepared to have acted for him. I acted for him, I defended him, and he was found not guilty after some of the evidence against him had been excluded. Now, we now know for a fact that he was in fact truly innocent, because another man called Napper was ultimately convicted of that killing, and on the basis that his DNA was discovered on the body of the deceased. And everybody now accepts that Colin Stagg had nothing to do with it at all. Now, that is an illustration of a man who was totally innocent, but had been charged with a heinous crime. And unless people were prepared to represent him despite that accusation, he may have ended up being convicted and spent many years in prison.
Finally, you speak about the eve of verdicts and the restless nights, the restful nights that you have, and other nights when you honestly believe someone is innocent. When you look back at your considerably successful and acclaimed career, William, do you have any regrets?
No, I think I've been very lucky to have a job that I found extremely rewarding and extremely enjoyable. It's been hard work, but I've enjoyed it, and I've no regrets at all.
Well, I can certainly recommend it as a great read. It's now out in paperback. It's Under the Wing, and it reflects
Under the Wig.
Under the Wig, I should say. Absolutely. The 47-year legal career chronicled in his memoir, Under the Wig. My thanks to William Clegg, QC, for joining us on The Hard Shoulder.
Thank you very much for having me.